Welcome to the Soul Summit Podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Preedy. I'm here to help bridge the gap for women and families in the outdoors, build a community of adventure junkies, and roll out your weekly dose of positive vibes. With almost two decades in the health and fitness world and an untamable passion for hunting in the outdoors, my mission is to help you live your bucket list life and move boldly in the direction of your dreams. Meet us here weekly as I connect with like-minded outdoor men and women to discuss health and mindset, accountability, life and entrepreneurship, as well as all things hunting and epic untold stories. The Soul Summit Podcast is brought to you by Maven Optics, Baku E-Bikes, Hoyt Archery, Onyx Maps, and Sawyer Products. For more information on these companies or to access the Soul Summit Podcast discount codes, be sure to check out our show notes. Wait a second. Before you fast forward through any of this, I have to tell you, you are not going to want to press the forward button yet. There is a pretty incredible opportunity in this episode towards the end where we're talking about an Alaska experience, and there is something exclusive to this podcast. So make sure you don't fast forward through this one. In this episode of the Soul Summit Podcast, I am joined by my dear friend, Nicole Rusink. Her and I crossed paths several years ago through the introduction from our husbands, and she shares her journey from the Midwest to Alaska when her and her family moved there 13 years ago. We also talk about that transition and finding her footing in a new environment and how it really has just been an absolute dream come true for them. Nicole discusses the cultural importance of the Iditarod in Alaska, which her and her husband just came back from watching in person. She also highlights the deep bond between the mushers and their canine companions. Pretty cool experience, and it was great to hear about that. She also shares some personal insights into her collaborative dynamic with her husband as they're both hunting guides up in Alaska, and she sheds some light on the benefits, some of the obstacles, and the empowerment that comes from such a dynamic relationship. Pretty cool to hear all about what they're doing. And we also really just talk about the profound impact of mentorship on our dreams, goals, and our lives, which is a topic we have covered pretty extensively this season of the podcast. We also talk about some of the challenges as registered guides and being a female in this space. And we also, towards the end, get to start uncovering some of the highlights of the Alaska Women's Adventure coming up in July. So it's really cool to hear about that and all of the different things that we're going to get to do with that. Being said, there is an exclusive offer you can only find in this episode. You can save $500 off a single camp registration, or you can book with yourself and two friends. Buy two, get one spot for free means you get to come with two friends, three of you, for the price of two. Those are exclusive to podcast listeners in this episode, so be sure to take advantage of that. The code for $500 off a single is AK Bucket List 24, or the code for buy two, get one spot for free is AK Bestie Booking 24. You can also find these in the show notes. Without further ado, let's jump into today's episode of the Soul Summit Podcast. Today, I am joined by friend and sister, Nicole Rusink. She's a nurse and guide and all-around badass out of Alaska, but you did not always live up in Alaska, and life has evolved a bit for you. So walk us through a bit about kind of that transition from the Midwest to Alaska and what life looks like for you, Nicole.
I moved here to Alaska about 13 years ago. Grew up, born and raised in Ohio, amazing outdoor family. Actually kind of true, kind of not. My dad was an outdoorsman, and my mom learned to be after meeting my dad, which I have come to discover is kind of where I get my ability to not be afraid and dive in and try new things. I think 100% comes from my mom. My dad is always willing and able and and capable to do anything and everything. He's kind of the jack of all trades. And so I grew up hunting and shooting and doing things like that with him. My mom, on the other hand, was a city girl. And when she met my dad, learned to eat wild game, to do lots of the outdoor things that we all do now, and to can and process and take care of all the meat that my dad was able to provide for our family. So it was quite an interesting way to grow up, and I'm very grateful for it.
What was the transition then for you from growing up, you know, back in the Midwest to putting roots in the ground in Alaska?
Well, let's see. So 13 years ago, I kind of got this wild hair from a nurse that came in. She was going to be doing a travel assignment in Alaska, and she was telling me all about having been here before and coming back again, and what an amazing place it is to raise kids. And, you know, at that point in my life, I had a farm in Ohio, and my kids were, my son was junior high age, so seventh grade, and my daughter was in the first grade. You know, I had a job, but one that obviously nursing is great because you can change and do anything anywhere. And so I was at the time doing some public health work just because it worked well for my family, for my kids being school age, and my daughter, preschool, kindergarten, first grade. It was a great place to be. State government, county government is a tough place to stay financially and benefit wise, especially during those years. So I was always looking. And so this gal comes in and tells me all about Alaska and as a travel nurse. And I said, well, I have a family and kids in school and I can't uproot them. And she said, oh my gosh, you should just take a travel assignment, go for the summer. So I actually emailed my husband at the time and said, hey, what do you think about going to Alaska to work? And he said that I must have fallen and bumped my head. So it's pretty entertaining in that transition. But I did grow up hearing all about Alaska and what a great place it was. And it was someplace my dad always wanted to go and actually where he wanted to live when he got out of the service. And that didn't work out. He ended up back in his hometown and got a job, met my mom. And, you know, life happens and we don't all get to live our dreams. So yeah, it took almost a year from the time I first messaged and said, gosh, maybe we should move to Alaska until our house was sold and we were here. And I honestly had never been until I came on my house hunting trip. So that's how I physically got here.
So what was your, was it like shock and awe when you landed in Alaska? Like it's a stark contrast from the Midwest, right? So like, what were some of those first experiences and what was that kind of like settling into a new place to call home?
It really was shock and awe. First of all, I'm from Northern Ohio, which is glaciated. So completely flat, a few bumps here and there. I had lived in Southern Ohio for 10 years due to college and then post-college job and marriage and so had some rolling hills, Appalachia area. And of course, coming here for the first time on a house hunting trip, we came, I want to say maybe early January. And it was, you know, below zero and they'd have 700 inches of snow in the mountains. And it was stunning and amazing and a breathtaking place. And I'll definitely never forget my first trip here. We stayed for 4 days, bought a house, and moved a month and a half later. So quite a stark transition. Actually, everyone always jokes that I never liked the cold. Why would I move to Alaska? But for me, Ohio's miserable as far as winter goes because it's not enough snow to play in. Not enough to do anything in. It's either freezing rain or slushy from the inch of snow you got yesterday. And although it's brief and I do love spring and fall, winter's not a fun time for me in Ohio. And with the right gear, I have learned that I can love every season and every piece and part that Alaska can throw at me. So I have loved the transition.
I think that's one of the great things about, you know, seeing Alaska sometimes from afar is, you know, the other day, for example, it's, you know, I live here in the Pacific Northwest on the west side of Oregon primarily, and It's really crappy. I mean, it is as rainy as people, you know, assume that it is. And, you know, sometimes that's hard, that gloomy gray, don't see the sun, constantly raining, because like you just said, you don't really have great close opportunities to just go recreate. Sure, you can do it soggy. That's fine, whatever. But, you know, then I was online and I was looking at a guy up there, and Ben Reynolds, he was out there having fun on a snow machine and just getting out there, getting after it. It was a beautiful blue sky. And I think a lot of people think of Alaska in the winter as just like a dark, kind of desolate, not fun place to go. But there is so much recreation opportunity in Alaska. And I think that's one of the things that draws me to it the most.
There really is. And actually, that was another thing people were shocked and surprised about my move. I went from growing up on a mini farm in Ohio and then living on 50 acres and having my horses and all the outdoor things I did in Ohio to coming up here and buying a house on an acre in a neighborhood. And they're like, are you crazy? You're going to miss the horses and your activities so much. And though I thoroughly do miss my horses, and it's actually a subject that I avoid. I don't talk about them. And it's just still that ever so slightly painful place in my heart. But there is so much to do here. And if I want to go ride, I phone a friend and go ride, or we do horseback hunts, and there's still opportunities to do that. Honestly, I say now, I didn't realize how much time I spent doing the work around taking care of and having the animals that I had. And that was a lot of my outdoor time, where now my time is actually recreating. I mow my small yard and I plant flowers. But otherwise, if I'm outside, it's doing things I love to do. And in the winter, it's snow machining and snowshoeing and cross-country skiing. And in the summertime in Ohio, it's so hot that it's humid more than hot, I guess, but I don't want to be outside working in the winter or in the summertime. And here, summer's amazing. And like right now, it's March in Alaska and everyone's like, oh, it's still winter. And it's spring in Ohio. Heck, it's spring in Minnesota right now. And for me, this is my favorite time of year here. The sky is blue and the days are longer. And, you know, the end of February, we actually surpass Ohio in daylight. And I always tease my parents, ha, gotcha. I finally have more daytime than you. And it just gets better until October when you say, oh, thank you, God, for darkness. I'm so tired from all the amazing things that I did all summer. So
yeah,
the weather is good, bad, and ugly.
Absolutely. Summers are exhausting in Alaska. I don't live there, but I spend a lot of my summer there, and you never know when to go to bed. You know, it's just like, it's kind of funny because yesterday I went over after work and was helping my parents do some yard work, and my dogs kept bugging me. And I'm like, what are they doing? Like, why are they're not, one of my dogs is never needy. So when she needs my attention, I'm like, is there a fire? You know, Lassie, like what's going on? And she wanted dinner, and I was like, it's not even dinner time yet. I looked down at my watch. It was 5:30, but you know, it's that change in daylight makes a huge difference. But yeah, being a summer recreator up there in Alaska, you never know when to go to bed. You never know when to, you know, turn off the lights and call it a day, but it's great because you do get full opportunity to take advantage of all the things Alaska has to offer. I have to ask you though, you know, transitioning from, you know, being outdoorsy and hunting growing up in Ohio, what did that evolution look like for you? Did it take a while to gain confidence in a place as wild and rugged as Alaska? Or what did that evolution look like for you?
Actually, that's an amazing question. And I still am not quite sure how. I always joke that maybe I wasn't smart enough to be afraid. I don't know. I guess I didn't grow up big game hunting, just shooting with my dad and small game and a lot of fishing and camping. Never shot a bow until I was here and actually going through my divorce. So some very different experiences coming to Alaska. I went on my first big game hunt as soon as I had been here for a year. And loved it. It was phenomenal, amazing time outdoors. I was with my dad. So I always say, if I'm with my dad, I'm not afraid, because I'm, you know, I'm safe. And maybe every girl feels that way. Maybe it's just me, but I literally will follow him to the ends of the earth. And so my first three hunts here were with, he was with me, and he was able to take a brown bear, and I took my caribou, and we did tons of fishing and some small game hunting along the way. And each trip was amazing and memorable, and I'm so grateful to have them. But I can't say that one time I was afraid. And when my friends saw where I was camping and the places that we were going on these trips, I mean, our second trip was a fly out, drop off remote, float 60 miles on a river. And all my pictures are like fish carcasses and giant bear prints in the mud and silt. And my friends are like, that's where your tent is. Why are you camping where the bears are eating? And I said, well, because we were bear hunting. So you need to be where the bears are. And, but I really never thought of, I mean, we take a bear fence. We do the precautionary things, and, I feel like I'm well educated. And so I really was never afraid. And honestly, I am not a solo hunter, because I just feel like we should all put safety first and not put ourselves at extreme risk. At least that's my, you know, where I personally stand. So I guess I've just never really, even flying remote in some of the situations I've been in, I'm very trusting, and I haven't been afraid.
That's awesome. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, fear is a legitimate feeling, but fear can overtake you if it's your focus. And that's something that I try to think about and talk about quite a bit with people is, you know, if your mind can't get away from the thought of all of the if, ands, or buts, the worst case scenarios, sure, be prepared for them. But if you're focused or hyper-focused on those things, the experience for you is not going to be super enjoyable. And your time outdoors is probably going to be, you know, less than what you want it to be. So removing that component, I think, can be really beneficial. Sure, easier said than done. But, you know, the more you play into that fear, the more you're going to find yourself restricted in the things that you want to go out and do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of my favorite sayings is the be fearless in the pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. And funny enough, I only found that probably, like, I don't know, 5 years ago. And I can't say I'm not afraid. I feel like I have good plans in place. And I think part of it is that my children are adults. And I jokingly said there's places I would like to travel to, but I won't go until my kids are adults and capable of taking care of themselves in case something were to happen to me. And I always tell them when we go fly remote, where we're going, when I should be back, and if I'm not, who to call to go find us. And they know that if I'm out and something happens, that I'm never alone. So there should be someone to document what happened. And I'm living my life, and that is part of our move to Alaska. And the reason I wanted my kids to step outside their comfort zone, and my entire family my dad's entire family, born, raised, always been in Ohio, right? And my kids' parent or father's side has also all born, raised, stayed in Ohio. And I just felt like they needed to know that if you don't like what's happening in your life or what you're doing in your life or any one thing, that you shouldn't be afraid to change that and mm-hmm. step outside your comfort zone. So that was part of my move. And funny, everyone says, you had to move 4,200 miles to prove that. And no, I didn't. Alaska was my choice. But part of that choice to move at all was to step outside my comfort zone and do something different with our lives and not be afraid to make a change. So,
well, I feel like so many people feel stuck, you know, whether that's because of family, which, you know, is completely valid, or if that's career, or whatever. But I feel like so many people feel stuck and unable to like make that change. You know, and I'm not saying everybody needs to pick up and move, but if there's a desire on your heart to experience something you haven't experienced, I think there's so much power and growth that can happen in stepping into that new thing and going like, yeah, I don't know if this will end up working out. I don't know if this will be the place that I love forever, but I'll never know unless I try.
Absolutely. And that's, I told the kids, you know, we may not love this. We may be back in 2 years, but we're going to try it and we're going to give it a whirl. And the kids and I have stayed here. My son is married. I have grandkids. I'm not going anywhere. This is an amazing place. And I miss my parents like crazy. I miss home. And it's funny because I've moved multiple times within Alaska. And so I kind of feel bad because, you know, I was born and raised in Ohio in the same house that my parents still live in. And so not only am I lucky enough that my parents are still married, but they also still live in the home I grew up in. And so for me, that will always be the place to go home to. And my kids don't have that. I think they consider my parents' home a place to go home to. And, but it's not the same as growing up in one place. But you know, so many families don't have that these days. And up here, so many families are military. So most of my kids' friends haven't been here their whole lives and don't live in the same house that their families were raised in. So it's not as common here as it was back home.
You know, hindsight is always 20/20 for sure. But are there things in that transition for you that you wish that you would have done a little bit differently?
Honestly, I don't think so. I mean, I was thrilled with my job. The kids both adapted very well school-wise. I mean, my son came home. Oh my goodness. The first day of school, he came home and he was the one I was most worried about. My daughter at 7 was, wherever you are, I'm happy, Mom, wherever you are, right? At 7 years old, they just want to be with you. And where Colton at 12, 13 years old was very much involved with his friends and sports and the things he liked to do. But he also loved the outdoors and hunting with my dad. And he didn't get much of that in Ohio. So he was super excited about the outdoor opportunities. And strangely enough, that wasn't something he really took to in Alaska as far as the hunting side. However, he does love to be outside and he does love to shoot. But transition wise, the kids both did great. He came home the first day of school and said, Mom, my new BFF is the hottest girl in the 7th grade.
So, he was like, hooked.
Okay. Yeah, he was hooked. So, and they're still friends today. So, I can't help but think that it was good for all of us. I was married when I came here. I got divorced several years later. He went back to Ohio. And then I met my husband here in Alaska and feel very grateful to, well, I got Courtney out of the deal. So that was awesome. Our husbands were friends, so that worked out well. So I married into even more of an outdoor life, with my husband being an outfitter and, you know, we're growing more and more in the outdoors together. And I love everything that we do and experience. And, heck, we just got home from Nome from watching the finish of the Iditarod. And that's like a bucket list, amazing trip. And I honestly didn't realize it would be a bucket list trip until I was there. And, it was overwhelming to see that finish and to be part of that experience. So every day, new things.
I'd love for you to expand on that a little bit and just give us a little bit more for people who don't know like the history of the Iditarod. Not that you have to go into the full extent of that, but talk to us a little bit more about what that is and why that's so big up there in Alaska.
So the Iditarod is run in remembrance of the Serum Run. So giant pandemic back in, I'm terrible at years, so I don't know what year. But basically, remote village of Nome, people are dying and they need this this vaccine. And so sled dogs were the way across to Alaska then and the only way to get from point A to point B. So there was literally a relay of dog teams that ran the serum from the coast here south of Anchorage clear out to Nome. So 1,000 miles via sled dog to get medication needed out to Nome. And in remembrance of, and to keep the tradition of the sled dog alive, they run this 1,000-mile race annually called the Iditarod. And so a musher, which is the guy driving the sled, is on what was traditionally a wooden sled. And those, of course, have evolved into some amazing materials with very minimal gear. They start with 16 dogs. They do a big party ceremonial start in Anchorage. And then the actual start is on Willow Lake in Willow, Alaska. And they take off from there. I think this year there were 39 dog teams of 16 dogs per team. They're not allowed to add any dogs to their team, but they can leave dogs at stops along the way. So there are mandatory stops, mandatory rests, veterinarians at every checkpoint for the dogs, nursing and physician assistants out throughout the stops for the mushers. They work really hard to keep everybody healthy and happy along the way. They spend months planning the food and bedding and all these things for the animals along the way, and lots of money doing drops at each stop for the animals along the way. So the mushers are literally only carrying enough with them to get from one point to the next point where they can pick up more straw, more food. And they literally are cooking, making hot water, making hot mush for their dogs to eat while they're out there. And it's phenomenal to think of what they do. And I mean, I think it got to 47 below at one point this year on the trail, which is insane. And they work through all of these things. They have coats and booties and all the things for the dogs. And the mushers don't even have a tent. They sleep right out there in their sled with their sleeping bag with their dogs. And so to see Dallas Seavey this year won his 6th Iditarod, which is a record. No one's ever won 6 before. And he's set multiple records anyway, but to see him come across the sea ice on the Bering Sea through Norton Sound into Nome and through what they call the Burled Arch, which is this big frame arch of burled wood that they put up in town. And I'm trying not to cry. It was phenomenal to see that happen. And the family unit of that musher and his dogs, they're all of them literally athletes. The dogs, the people, they are true athletes, like Olympians. It's phenomenal to see what they accomplish.
I see and feel your emotional, you know, response to this. So I have to ask you, like, what was your biggest takeaway from that in those moments?
Actually, I didn't expect to get to hear, basically they do a little mini press conference with each musher after. And so to get to hear Dallas was the only one I sat through. They all come in through the night. So I think he came in at like 6 PM and the next one was at 10 and they, you know, so I didn't stay up all night, but, listening to Dallas talk about his relationship with his dogs, his losses of dogs throughout the years and, the decisions that they make versus, you know, about what dogs are part of the team and what dogs maybe have been part of the team and are no longer or didn't make the team, but still have this important role in their kennel. So they may have 50 dogs that are in their kennel and they're literally deciding the week before the race, which 16 dogs will be part of the actual racing team for this specific race. And, But it's amazing to hear that, oh, such and such dog that won last year, we've decided, you know, he's not going to race this year, but he's been mentoring 2 litters of puppies. And they literally, these older dogs are spending time with the puppies and teaching them amazing life lessons. And it's phenomenal to see how much they love their dogs. And there obviously are some people who are anti all of these things. And having seen it firsthand and seen the love and relationships and, you know, Dallas sitting up on this little podium that they pull out for photos at the end and the dog's licking his face. So they love him and they trust him and he has to trust them. I mean, he's in the middle of nowhere with these dogs and they all depend on each other. So really an eye-opening experience And then honestly, sitting out at 10 o'clock at night on the sea ice, watching the sunset and a dog team run through. It was a gift. I'm very grateful.
Like, pinch me, right? Like this is surreal feeling.
Yes. Never thought I would get to see that. I mean, originally, obviously being from Ohio, never thought I would see the start of the Iditarod or get to help. I mean, I've been behind the scenes and helped with a dog team before. And it's an amazing opportunity and experience. And I honestly, growing up, didn't know what the Iditarod was. So I'm always impressed to hear school kids that do know or follow an Iditarod team or, and there's tons of races. There's little sprint races. There are tons of things that different teams do to keep their dogs active. And there are people who race to race. There are people who race to finish. And really, really awesome opportunity to be a part of that.
That's so cool. It's great to see those like longtime traditions upheld, you know, and to know that there's so much culture and history that goes into those, I think is amazing to be able to witness, to be a part of that, to see that. I can't even imagine. That's definitely a bucket list item and something that I hope to get to witness someday as well.
We can help make that happen. Come along.
The Soul Summit podcast is proudly supported by some of the top companies in the hunting and outdoor world, allowing people like us to make common bonds in uncommon places. So let's take a break and hear a word from today's awesome sponsors. If you're ready for premium optics without the premium price tag that comes along with it, check out Maven Optics. This consumer direct company is turning heads and winning awards for their top quality products. Binoculars, rangefinders, rifle scopes, and spotting scopes, they've got it all. Head to mavenbuilt.com. Use the code SOULSUMMIT-GIFT on your next purchase and get a little something extra just for listening to the podcast. Elevate your life and your hunts with one of Baku's top-of-the-line e-bikes. Whether you use them on your hunting and fishing adventures, for a hand around the farm, or to commute around your local area, Baku e-bikes are not only reliable, but they add a whole lot of fun to life. Find their full line of products at baku.com, BAKCOU.com. There are some awesome bows on the market, but if you ask me, I'd say that Hoyt has some of the best bows around. Built tough to withstand the abuse of hard hunts, reliability in your shot so you can focus on the hunt, and a dead in the hand feel that keeps you coming back for more. Head to Hoyt.com and check out their new custom bow builder. If you're serious about getting into the outdoors, be sure to check out what Sawyer has to offer. From water filtration to sunscreen and insect repellent, Sawyer has you covered. Not to mention Sawyer's commitment to giving back, helping fight global issues, and bring clean water to more people around the world sets them apart from the rest. Head to Sawyer.com to see what they have going on. When it comes to hunting and exploring the great outdoors, there are endless tools, gizmos, and gear, but one I never leave home without is my Onyx Maps. Knowing I have access to landowner information, property lines, topographical layers, historical and wildlife data, and so much more gives me the confidence to take my outdoor experiences to the next level. Grab your free trial right now at onyxmaps.com. Now, let's jump back into the conversation.
So switching gears here a little bit, you talk about, you know, hunting with your husband. He's an outfitter and, you know, so you got to kind of jump into those big, big game experiences with him. But, you know, there's a lot of questions I want to ask you about what that looks like. But one of the biggest questions I have for you is, what is it like for you guys in that partnership when you're in the field? Do you guys have a pretty good working relationship out there? Does it take work, or how do you guys make that successful?
Ha, that's hilarious. Yes and no. we do guide together and we do hunt together. I jokingly say I am no longer hunting with my husband as a personal hunting partner. That's not true. I totally love hunting with him, but I will say he has a very different pace. He has a lot longer legs than I do. He's much faster than I am. And, so I spend a lot of time catching up, which can be good and bad because he spends a lot of time looking ahead and scouting and coming back to me, which is kind of nice. Along with the fact I'm not afraid to be there by myself while he's doing these things. So that's good. At the same time, there are days when I'm very frustrated because I just want to do it together and he's out there way ahead of me. So that can be very frustrating. At the same time, we have had some amazing hunts together and, you know, some flights into the mountains in New Zealand and amazing other world experiences that I can't imagine doing with anyone else. I adore being in the outdoors from him. I adore learning from him. Guiding with him is a very different experience than hunting with him. Generally, if we're guiding together, it's because there's more than one hunter. And we tend to divide and conquer, which works really well because we each obviously have our own strengths. I am not a patient person. I think in general, he is more patient, like at home and relationship wise. However, when it comes to clients, I'm more patient with the little needs than he is. So we tend to divide people based on who's quicker, who might need more attention. And so people get the best of both worlds, I think, in everything they need in a hunt. But at the same time, hey, you need me to go empty your urine jug from overnight. That would be me, not my husband. So, you know, when you have some of these old guys that struggle to get out of a tent or tie their shoes, that's my go-to. And he's definitely not the patient one for those things. So we do very well that way. At the same time, because I'm slower than him, I see things he doesn't. So it's kind of nice either on a hunt with him or guiding with him to be the one that says, hey, back up, come back here. I see a bear. And, or, hey, come back here. I just saw a really big buck. And, it's cause they're on a march for what they've already seen. And so, they get kind of hyper-vigilant focused on that one thing. And, I think it is good to slow down and see what's around you. And honestly, part of it for me is that I like to slow down and see my surroundings, period. I'm there for the experience, not necessarily the hunt. And I have to remember when I'm guiding that my client is there for the hunt, but I do try and bring them the experience. So if we're not on something, then I'm the one saying, hey, look at this cool plant, or hey, did you know this is the only water we're going to find for the next however many miles? And I know it's small, but we should top off our water bottles here, and that here's why. So I think hunting together is a huge benefit just because we do see things differently.
What do you feel like, if you are willing to share, was your guys' biggest hurdle in hunting and partnering in that way together? And what did you guys do to overcome that?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing is that if I question him, it's because I'm trying to learn something. And his original interpretation of my questioning him is that I'm questioning his knowledge or questioning his ability. And so, like, for example, one day I asked him, we came to a Y in a trail going over the peak of a mountain, and we come to a Y and you're going to the left side or to the right side of this peak. And he hangs a left. And I said, hey, why are we going this way? And he said, because it's the way we need to go. And I said, no, really, like, tell me why. And he turned around and looked at me like I had three heads, like, obviously, because this is the way we go. And I said, no, really. I mean, if I were here by myself, how would I know to go this way? Teach me. And so really it comes down to communicating to him that I want to know, because I want to know, if I were here by myself, how would I decide this? Because I don't have the knowledge in the mountains that he has. I grew up a flatlander. I can see where I'm going. I can see what's next. And when you're in Alaska, sometimes you think everything is good. And then, like, his answer that day was, because if you walk another 500 feet around that point, it cliffs out. And I said, oh, so you've been there. That's why you know. So basically, it's a lot of what he knows is obviously by experience. And so reminding him that I'm not questioning his knowledge, because his knowledge is vast. And not just Alaska hunting. I mean, It's phenomenal to see someone, like, I'm headed across this hillside and there's no trail, right? I'm just traipsing across this hillside, you know, side hilling, foot downhill, and he's walking 8 feet above me. And I'm like, why does he look like he's walking easier than me? Oh, because he's on an animal trail that's 8 inches wide. How does he find those? Right? So I can't even see it, but he can. So I'm constantly still learning from him, and he's been guiding up here since he was 18, and I've been here for 13 years. So, and I'm out a handful of times every year hunting, and it's his livelihood. So he's there a lot. And, so I really try and be appreciative to him of the things that he does teach, and, point out his knowledge and express my interest in learning. And so he's not feeling offended when I question him.
Definitely. No, I think that communication piece is vital because, you know, yeah, it can be in the delivery, but it's like, I feel like when you're hungry to learn, you have a million questions. And if your partner or your mentor knows that you're just hungry for the knowledge, you want to be able to pick, why would I choose right or left versus right? Those things are really important because it helps you build those self-reliant skills in the end game. Which kind of leads me to my next question, you know, for somebody who didn't grow up in the area that you're guiding now, who has been up there for 13 years with, I wouldn't say limited knowledge by any means, but not what your husband has. How did you find your confidence to be able to step into that guiding space?
I would say I haven't guided any place that I haven't gone. So I think first of all, scouting and knowing my terrain or where I'm going is important. At the same time, it's not like I always hang a left, you know, we sometimes go a different path. So, and I think on those initial trips with my dad, I'd never been there before. We just went. And so I think I grew up with having my dad have that confidence that you just go do it and it'll work out one way or the other. And having that faith that, okay, the river goes downstream. And if you're going downstream, it will eventually get to a bigger body of water. Right. So, those little knowledge points, I guess, north, south, east, west, I've always been the kid that knew which way was home. It was a joke as a kid when we were out driving around, my dad would say, which way is grandma's house? And I point that way. And he'd say, great, which way is home? And I point that way. And so I kind of have always been the person that if I can see the skyline, I know where I am. And not everybody has that. So that would definitely make things more scary. But I think everything's worth trying. And if you don't love it, don't do it again. And being safe as you try new things. Don't put yourself in a dangerous place. I definitely have gone places that were pretty darn sketchy. And I actually have followed Jeremy some places that were fairly sketchy, where he said, you should go up and around. And I look at how far up and around is and say, eh. Oops, excuse me. Sorry. I can do this. I don't need to go up and around. And so, I don't know. I guess, like I say, sometimes I think, maybe I'm not smart enough to be afraid.
No, I think that's probably a really good quality sometimes to have is, you know, you don't have the focus on, you know, feeling like you can't do something. But I ask because, you know, obviously it's a very male dominated profession to guide. And I love seeing more and more women get involved. I love seeing more women out there, but you know, I occasionally wonder like what hurdles did that woman have to come across to feel like she's not an imposter in this man's world? Not that I think that that should be the case, but I know for me too, you know, I am a registered guide here in Oregon and still have not stepped out to actually guide people because I'm still getting over the fear of like, am I the right person to do this? Am I qualified to do this? You know, I've been hunting my entire life. I could, you know, I know that I have the skills to do it, but like everywhere I look, you know, 99% of these are men doing it, not women.
That is very true. And you absolutely do have the knowledge to be guiding and you should. I think for me, being having the confidence to judge the animals, right? So number one, so tell a billy goat from a nanny goat. We still have, there's still plenty of guides who shoot the wrong one, right? They pick the wrong one. They think it's a billy goat, it's a nanny goat. And as long as you're in the situation where it truly doesn't matter, is on the legal side and it's a want, then that's not huge. But it's huge to a client who wants a billy goat, right? So teaching yourself those skills that you can be confident in your decision-making, number one. And number two, confident in your shooting ability so that you have the ability to back up your client if that's legal where you are, and the ability to protect yourself and your client from, for me, a bear, are probably my top things. My downfall is speed when I'm hunting with men. So I can't guide the clients that my husband guides. Like, that's the other thing, is we do a lot of father-son hunts together because he can take the son and be half a mile ahead of us, and I'm with dad because I don't have the legs, and dad's 70 years old and doesn't have the speed. So we do a lot of catch up, move here, move there. And that is really frustrating for me, that I can't keep up. That is my biggest downfall. So I guess we all think about confidence and things in different ways. And for me, it's not about finding the animal or knowing what animal to take, or knowing where to go. It's being able to keep up and making sure that I have a client that matches my skill level in, so I'm not holding someone back. So I think that is huge in, like, thank goodness my husband as a registered guide is very conscientious of what client he puts with what guide, and whether it's personality or speed or who needs to tie whose shoes. He's very aware of that. And I think that's what makes him and us successful and makes clients come back and share us with their friends and people that want to come out.
Absolutely. No, that's definitely key to success, is just being able to read the client, you know, and I think that's so important. Back to kind of the point about guiding, and what you alluded to, is having that mentorship, I think, is so important. And we've been talking a lot this season on the podcast about, you know, micro mentors, those little people that, you know, they might not even know how much they're impacting your journey, but people who have already been in the places that you've been, that have already done the things that you want to do, have already achieved the things that you would like to achieve, surrounding yourself with those people. It's like, don't be the smartest person in the room. Like, my goal always is to, like, surround myself with people who I aspire to be like in some way or another. And I think that there's so much power in that, because you get to almost kind of, in some cases, fast track the knowledge that you get to learn by learning from other people's mistakes too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's interesting is I don't have a lot of female guides around me. I have female outdoorsmen around me, right? And honestly, that's what I love the most. I would prefer to guide a bear viewing trip as to a bear hunting trip. I'm very comfortable being around the bears and up close and personal. I really like sharing my knowledge. And I think the lack of fear is scary. It's in itself to some people. But that's really important in guiding bear viewing, is being able to take a stand and not showing fear. And so I think that's something I'm better at, and I actually enjoy more. You know, obviously there's certain hunts that I enjoy more, but, the female hunters in my life, actually one of them, I have a quote from my friend Becca who says, "If I don't cry, it wasn't a good hunt." So we all have our moments, and we all get overwhelmed, and my tears might just be shed over the animal that I take. My tears might be shed because I rolled down a hill. They might be shed because I'm just stinking tired and I need a break. And as a woman, that's something more likely to happen on my hunt. And I don't do it in front of other people, but we all have those personal needs. And for me, being in the outdoors, like I said, it's mostly the experience. And my tears are usually shed sitting, watching a sunset and being grateful.
1,000% Yeah. I feel the same way. I'm constantly, you know, I keep my camera and my quick capture off of my shoulder strap on my pack, and I'm constantly whipping that baby off to take a picture of a piece of grass, you know, to take a picture of those small things, to look at the rose hips, you know, just all of those things. I think for me, and not everybody, you know, shares our same kind of view on this, but those are the moments for me. And I say this all the time, if it weren't for the need to like put protein on the table of my family, I could probably never kill another animal in my life and just go on that experience, wake up in those wild places, watch that, you know, stunning sunset, watch those animals move around. For me, that experience, like you talked about, is bar none where it's at.
Absolutely. I struggle because there have been plenty of times where Jeremy says, come on, quit taking pictures. Let's go. And, but those are the moments. And at mm-hmm. the same time, there are times when I'm like, oh, I want to stop and take a picture. And I know that I shouldn't, or I can't. And I think to myself, you know what? That photo is just going to be in my mind. Mm-hmm. And it's one I'll treasure forever. And there are so many moments on trips with my dad, you know, before I had a good camera or a good cell phone to take pictures with, that, or it's pouring down rain and I didn't get my camera out, that, they're forever moments in my memories with my dad. Mm-hmm. But in those National Geographic photo moments where I'm like, I can't believe I didn't have a camera.
Right.
Yeah. Great memories.
So talking about those epic experiences, we're going to shift gears here for a second and talk about our Alaska Women's Adventure Retreat going on July 17th through the 24th, starting in Anchorage. You are the guide that we are working with this year, and so excited to take this adventure. So last year, our 2023 camp was down in Southeast Alaska, and it was amazing. A small group of women got together to fish and hike and laugh and cry and do all of the things. And we've expanded on this for this year. We're going to start in Anchorage and travel down the Kenai Peninsula and get to see some of, in my experience, some of the best parts of Alaska. So walk us through a little bit about that, what people have to look forward to and what that experience is going to look like.
All right. Well, I am very excited for the trip, and this will be a first doing with Courtney. So totally stoked for that. I honestly have never done a women's retreat of this size. I have been to a few things, but the large, like become an outdoor woman kind of thing. So first of all, fishing the Kenai. I am so excited for all that you have planned on our fishing trip. I have floated the Kenai River rafting multiple times. I have fished the Kenai River during the Red Run, but I have never float and fished. And I'm super stoked for the opportunity to do that with the guide you have lined up. Really hoping that we get to see some bears on that part of our trip, which we usually do. The water of the Kenai is one of the most beautiful things mm-hmm. in the world. So that's a very exciting part of the trip. We'll also get to do some bear viewing. And that day also we'll be fishing with the bears. So that I also have not done. I've done bear viewing and I've done the fishing in this area, but I've never done fishing while the bears are seasonally fishing. So that's an awesome opportunity, as well as the fact that that's a fly out trip. So we'll be doing some flight seeing in a small plane. So really cool opportunity there.
Yeah, we're going to the Nordic Spa as well. So we'll get to do a lot of these cool, true Alaskan experiences, but we also get a little bit of pampering. We've got hot tubs and saunas at every location, as well as we're going to spend some time at the Nordic Spa in Alyeska, which is going to be beautiful. I think that part is just, you know, it's a little bit upscale. You get to see some fancy things there. It'll be nice to pamper ourselves and treat ourselves a bit. And then we're also going to go with Go Alaska on an ATV glacier tour. Talk to us a little bit about what people can expect on that.
All right. So the ATV trip is about 6 hour total, includes a little lunch at the glacier. Of course, this is a summertime trip. So the lake will be thawed and there are huge iceberg chunks in the lake. It's gorgeous. You can see the toe of the glacier and we'll sit and wait and maybe get to hear the big crunch and crack and watch some water move with some splashes. Courtney has seen that up close and personal with me there. The fireweed is the most beautiful, invasive, it's a gorgeous plant and makes for the most beautiful, stunning pictures against the glacier water. So, side by side ATV, out to a glacier in the river bottom, great trip, will be super fun with a bunch of ladies.
And then we're also going to explore the Kinnick Valley on horseback as well. So a totally different day. We're going to take some horses out and get to go explore that way. This is going to be a great trip to have a camera in hand because it's so picturesque. I mean, I feel like being in the Palmer Wasilla Eagle River area, like you're just kind of sitting right in the middle of all those mountains. It's absolutely breathtaking. There's wildlife, you know, all around. So it's going to be just, I think, a fun trip for women to come. And, you know, we're not going to be hubbed down in one central location. We're going to be pretty mobile the whole time. So it's a great opportunity to see multiple parts of the great state of Alaska. And I'm just really like anticipating, looking forward to seeing who all gets to come on this trip. I know we have some returning ladies that came on the 2023 Southeast Alaska trip, but it's going to be wild. It's going to be lots of laughs and probably tears at the end of it. And I think that for me, the most exciting part, the thing I'm looking forward to the most as far as the Alaska piece is the bear viewing. I was able, while we were up near Cooper Landing last year, to take a flight seeing tour, and we saw so many wildlife. I mean, black bears, tons of brown bears. We saw sheep. We saw goats. You know, we saw everything. We didn't see moose, which we were very surprised not to have seen moose on that trip. But just the things that you can take in, you know, in a week's time frame in Alaska is pretty incredible.
It is. It is phenomenal. And honestly, I'm looking forward to some sit around the fire, girl time, bonding experience with some amazing ladies and get to talk about what we see and what we appreciate most. And, a little pamper your soul.
Pamper your soul. I think it's like the ultimate reset button. You know, it's the cup filler. It's when you walk away from an experience like that, you know, and I can speak firsthand, you know, I've done umpteen events since 2017, and the impact that is created from, you know, not only the experience of just living, but the connectedness that you get with like-minded women, the sisterhood that you leave with it's unlike anything I've ever seen. And, you know, I kind of joke about the crying piece, but like at the end of it, like these women are embracing each other. They're, you know, they're connected in a way that I don't feel like you can get in those kind of day-to-day life experiences. It's when you step out of what is quote unquote comfortable for you, when you take an experience that is a true bucket list or a once in a lifetime for some people, and you just step into that and you own and you're present for every little piece of it. You take in the fresh air and the breeze, and the views and the mountains. I mean, you come home just with your soul on fire and ready to tackle anything.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to spend this week with you, Courtney, and get to know you on a more personal level. We tend to get like a day together when you are in town, so having a full week together will be amazing. I'm really excited about also having the opportunity with you to plan more trips. There are several things I would love to do more in your part of the world. So I'm totally stoked about all of that.
I mean, and we do have some goat hunts coming up for this year, so we might get some tent days and some adventures and some hunting time together as well, but absolutely looking forward to it. I thank you so much just for your inspiration to me to not live, you know, confined by what I feel like I can or can't do. The sky's the limit. You know, glass ceilings are meant to be shattered. So thank you for being a leader when it comes to helping women build their confidence and really truly realize what they're capable of.
No, absolutely. And thank you for being this amazing mentor of, I don't know how you managed to prioritize your outdoor time with your family, with kids still school age, but you do such an amazing job of putting yourself in the outdoors, no matter what else is happening, because it's where you find your peace. And I need to do more of that. So you're a good example.
I think Thank you. I appreciate that so much. Because, you know, I think we can all be our own worst critics, right? And wonder if we're doing it right, whether that's, you know, parenting or normal relationships or whatever. But somebody once said, don't let school get in the way of a good education. And so for me, you know, yeah, I prioritize some of my own time out there, but I'm really just trying to help enrich their experiences. And it kind of stems from, I grew up pretty, I definitely say sheltered, but also, you know, my parents didn't have much. And so we didn't do much. And it wasn't until I started traveling and like getting outside of this tiny little place that I live that I was like, people are great, or they're not, but like, there's a different experience that you can have when you step outside of what you've always known. And I think, you know, one of the things too, that's so great about Alaska is dipping my toe into the cultural differences, getting an appreciation for things like the Iditarod or those long-term cultural beliefs and ways of life that people still live. And I think it's incredible to be able to just go and witness that. So I'm incredibly excited about this experience with you. I think it's going to be a great trip. I think that the sky's the limit for us. And I think we'll probably put our heads together and collaborate on some other things. But in the meantime, if people want to, or if we've got couples listening in or fellas listening in that want to come experience Alaska, let them know how you guys or where you guys offer some of your experiences, hunts, and the things that you offer with Go Alaska.
Absolutely. Go Alaska, we are just building our website. So all the contact information is there, but you can't book through the website yet. It is GoAlaska 907. And then Jeremy's business is Rogue Expeditions, and that's where we do all the hunting side. Go Alaska is really set up to do eco-tour stuff. And just the few things that we do, the snow machining adventures and the ATV adventures and kayaking and those things. But more than anything, to help people to set up a trip and reach out and find the other things that they want to do. So you want to go see sled dogs? Hey, we know some people. Here's who you should call. So making sure that you have a very well-rounded experience and don't plan to be in Fairbanks and Seward on the same day. So that's a big challenge for a lot of people, is figuring out how far they can get. And so we want to be able to help everyone have the best experience possible on their trip. So if you're looking to do an Alaska trip, reach out to us.
Awesome. And outside of that, let people know where they can find you online, Nicole.
We are goalaska907.com. We have an Instagram. It's really weird. It's go_Alaska_907. You can reach out to me on Instagram at Rogue Huntress AK, or on Facebook, Nicole Davis Rusink.
So perfect.
Happy to see you guys.
Awesome. Thank you so much for jumping on today. It was a small act of Congress to get us on here and recording and everything working. So hopefully this goes off without a hitch. But again, thank you for your time and thank you for creating opportunities for people to go out and explore, build their confidence, and take their own bucket list experiences to the next level.
Absolutely. Thank you, Courtney.
Once again, thank you for tuning into the show. We hope that your cup is full and you're ready to embrace your untamable vibe. If you enjoyed the show, could you do us a favor? Help us grow our audience by sharing your favorite episode on social media, sending the episode to a friend, and leaving us a review online. We love to hear from you. One more thing, be sure to press that subscribe button and never miss a weekly episode. See you next week.